Hello, and welcome to the San Carlos Computer Club podcast. My name is Scott Stimson, your host from International Computer Solutions. If you're looking for a computer solution on the internet, I would appreciate you checking with me, scott@internationalcs.net. And this is the San Carlos Computer Club, a weekly meeting of tech enthusiasts that meet to talk about tech topics, news of the week, and help each other. Today is Saturday, June 27th, 2020, and this is a recording from today's meeting. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the San Carlos Computer Club. Tech on.
Just because everybody will have been touching everything.
Well, not the Comfort Inn in Benson, Arizona. They didn't even wear masks because it's not mandatory.
No, it's just nuts.
I'm looking for a new place to stay in Benson.
I got into a silly conversation with a friend of mine this morning about masks. And he's like, what other protection gear are there? I posted this meme about life jackets and sunglasses and sunscreen. And it's like all this protection gear is socially acceptable when you're protecting yourself. But when you wear a mask to protect other people, people get outraged by the idea and they think they're being forced. He's like, what other protection gear do you get forced to wear? And I'm like, you're really missing the point. There's no police officer coming over to your house making sure you're wearing your mask. That's not what we're talking with. It's a health issue. It's not a political issue.
Scott, the protection you're required by law to wear is seatbelts.
Seatbelts, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
And it used to be a huge discussion when they first started making them mandatory. You know, the people buying these fake things that look like they have a seatbelt on, and they're buying knives so they can cut themselves out of their car when they need to. It just gets silly.
Yeah, no, it is.
Gee, you look like a harem girl.
I know. Well, people keep walking through, so, and there's a person walking by with no mask on.
You know what?
I'm actually an employee here.
I read a very powerful study recently that's saying that all these infections are occurring indoors between people that have spent more than 15 minutes together at 6 feet. Like even if they've been at 6 feet, they've been without masks. And so so the study is showing that if you're in an enclosed space sharing air, and I think that's the big difference in thinking that people have to adjust to, is it's this idea of sharing air. You're sharing air with somebody for over 15 minutes, you may get infected. And it's highly likely you'll get infected. Whereas they've got studies now that are showing that if you're wearing a mask under the same circumstances, people are virtually not getting infected. You're wearing the mask so you're not infecting other people. So I think my rule of thumb now is not to spend 15 minutes indoor with strangers.
Yeah, well, that's the problem with eating in the restaurants.
Or the bars.
Because nobody has masks on, even while you're sitting and waiting for your food.
It's why we shouldn't be doing it.
That's our solution. We don't eat in restaurants.
And it also doesn't make a whole lot of sense that they would open beaches, but they wouldn't. Or they wouldn't open beaches, but they would open bars. Like there is some sense in letting people go out and get out of their house and be in open air and just being cautious with each other. But to open bars and not open beaches doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
The other thing is we need to wash our hands. Whether you got a mask on or not, you wash your hands before you take it off. You wash your hands after you take it off. Wash your hands.
Yeah, definitely wash your hands. Uh-huh. How come I can't let Irving in?
The problem is if you if you use too much alcohol wipes, they're finding that you're just really drying your skin out, and it's you really don't need alcohol wipes if you're wiping your, if you're washing your hands.
I also read another study that was talking about bringing COVID into your house on your feet. You know, we have a lot of sanitary mats that we're walking across right now with bleach and with alcohol. And this study was saying, or the guy that did the study said, basically bringing COVID into your house on your feet is like getting hit by lightning twice in a day. It's just not happening. So I think.
Good morning, everyone. Am I on?
Yes, you are, Irving. Good to hear from you. We are just getting started. We're talking about our own stuff at the moment. I'm trying to talk and put out a Facebook announcement, but I'm not doing very well. Why didn't it post? It should have posted.
When a friend of mine was going north, she stopped at the Elba for to eat, and they actually sprayed her feet.
Yeah, it sounds like Judy. I'm not on the video, on the camera. I don't know why.
I had it turned off.
Or
I'm masked up.
Judy's got her camera off, and I've got a toolbar in the middle. Who's B? Is that Stanley or Irving?
Bill. It's Bill.
Oh, it's Bill. No, Bill's right above. I see Bill. You can't.
I don't see myself, so I don't know if my camera's working.
Irving, I think it's you that the camera's not working if you're intending to have it on. Hello, Chris. I think you got in. Maybe you didn't. I'm having some weird. Oh, now I see Irving. Oh, wow. My video call just ended. I just lost my video call.
Who are you?
Good.
I just got knocked out of the call.
Good morning, everyone.
How are you guys doing? Hey, we should be getting started right at this moment if we're on time. And I've already hit a streaming button, but nobody's watching us on YouTube, and it doesn't matter. But thank you for joining us. This is the San Carlos Computer Club. I am Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions. And if you have computer problems anywhere out there on the internet, if you're looking for solutions, please give me a call. I'm here to help. Or send me an email, scott@internationalcs.net. And this is the San Carlos Computer Club. We try and meet every Saturday now at 9 in the morning and do this Google Meet. And I try and stream it on internet, stream it on YouTube. I see Cheryl shaking her head. Does that mean something's not working?
Okay, it looks like somebody has muted Scott. And I see a whole bunch of people that are muted.
But you can hear me, right?
You're muted, Scott.
I'm muted. Nobody can hear me? Oh, I am muted.
I think Irving did.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Who knew? I ended up disconnected as well. So let me try that again. I've done the intro. It's gone out on YouTube. It just hasn't gone to you guys. But welcome. Welcome. I'm glad you guys are here. Thank you for joining me this morning for San Carlos Computer Club. And the only thing I'll do is I'll just plug myself again. If you're out there having computer problems, looking for computer solutions, I'd appreciate it if you'd call me or send me an email, scott@internationalcs.net. Thanks for joining us. This is the San Carlos Computer Club. We've been talking about COVID for the last 20 minutes. And I don't know if we're actually done with that. We got more people coming in. Looks like Stanley got disconnected and reconnected. I got disconnected and reconnected. Maybe it's a Google Meet thing that's going on this morning. How's everybody doing this morning? Yeah, thumbs up from everybody. Well, as usual, I'm not necessarily that well organized, and I don't have an agenda. I do have a couple of topics I brought with me, and I'm happy to answer any questions or entertain any topics people have brought. And one of the topics that I'm very interested in is Linda has just gotten a new mesh network, and I was hoping she'd give us kind of a lowdown on what she's been dealing with and how happy she is with it. I know she liked the price. Are you ready to do that, Linda? Can you do that for us? Are you?
Hey, what'd you say?
Oh, I was just... That was a big introduction for you to share with us about your new Euronet.
Okay, so I got it, and it set up in 10 minutes, just like you said it would. And I haven't had any problem with it. But now I don't have to have all these different
routers, different extenders
on in my house. I just have the main one and the two, one in the bedroom and one over in my kitchen.
But these are the base stations, the nodes, I think they're called in Euro language.
Yes, nodes.
I think they're called nodes. I could be wrong. Okay. Yeah, I think they're nodes. I'll have to recheck that. Well, Linda, some of the features that you should have is on your mobile app, you should be able to see all the devices connected to your network, right?
On my mobile app?
Mm-hmm. You should be able to look on your phone and see all the different computers that are connected to your network. Computers and phones and tablets and things of that nature, TV boxes.
Oh, I think I did it on my tablet. Hold on.
Are you paying for service with Euro's mesh network, the cloud service?
You got 1 year free.
1 year free. Oh, that's new. That's new. You got 30 days free when I last set it up, so they must have done that this year.
Well, hold on. I think it's a 1 year. Hold on. Euro.
This is funny. I did all that on YouTube, and I forgot to hit the record on my end. I'm talking to myself now. Go ahead.
So I didn't take the free Alexa. Whoops, she just heard me. Because I already have three of them. So I didn't need any more, and I took the discount. So the whole thing with everything came to $169.
You feel like you have solid Wi-Fi connections throughout your house? Do you feel like you have any dead spots still?
Did you try it in the bedroom?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. No, I have it in my master bedroom, and then I just asked Jim if they could get it in the guest room, and he said, yes, no problem. That was a problem. When we went around the corner, then the two bedrooms didn't have any internet.
Yeah, the beauty of these mesh networks is that they use a variety of different ways to stay connected. And so they will, on the fly, change I'm at a loss for the words now, but the gigahertz, they'll change the frequency that they're transmitting data on the fly. And so if all of a sudden 5G is interfered with or not enough, they'll switch over to 2.4G. And the newer mesh networks, and I think you got, we did some research, Linda, you and I, or we got together with the information, because there's a pro version of, but I don't think you got that version. You got the base version. And one of the distinguishing characteristics was that it only had the 2.4 and the 5G spectrums, whereas the pro version has the third spectrum, that 5.4G. And all that means is more opportunities to create and maintain a connection, a wireless connection in your house. I like hearing your report, because what we discovered was that the pro version was almost $200 more for the same experience, as long as you weren't dealing with interference or range issues. it seems like you want to save $200.
Absolutely. Okay, I've got the app up. So what are you looking at it? I have online the family room, the master bedroom, and the kitchen.
Okay, so those are your access points. But then shouldn't you be able to see what's connected?
Then you go down below and it shows my Android, Android 2, Android 3, my Ring doorbell, and Samsung.
Now, from that interface, and forgive me, I'm just pulling this out of my butt because I don't have a Euro and I haven't touched it in 6 months, but it seems like you should be able to select those devices and choose whether they have internet or even schedule when they have internet. And this is a parent control function that is becoming popular. So like me with kids, I could say these tablets, those phones, these Chromebooks do not have access to the internet after 10 o'clock at night.
Oh, okay. So that's where you set up the profile then.
Yes.
I didn't add any profiles. I don't need to do that.
No, probably not. But it's a neat feature to have.
That's probably it. Add a profile. It says you can add profiles for each member of your family that you'd like to manage. Just tap on the plus button in the top right and tap the button below, and then it says add a profile.
Okay. I have not personally done that, so I couldn't talk you through that, but that sounds like what I'm talking about. It's a feature that comes with these mesh networks, and we've talked about it before. And I'll re-mention it again. These mesh networks provide you with those features from the cloud, not because they have to be in the cloud, but because the cloud was being developed at the same time. And what these hardware manufacturers are doing is they're trying to get you into a subscription service. They want to do micropayments with you over time. They want this device that you buy from them to continue to generate income for you. And so that's the reason they've picked this model. And I suspect that in the future, we may see some hardware companies come out with mesh networks that don't require cloud services. And what they're doing is they're really trying to sell that little margin. I charge just a little bit more to have a little less services because they know there's a market out there for people that don't want to dedicate their experience to the cloud. But we haven't seen that appear yet.
The other thing you could do is they've got a trial for you to turn on ad blocking.
There's very intelligent firewalling that you can participate in if you buy into their subscription service.
Right, but I just use the plain old AdBlock Plus that's on Chrome.
Yeah.
But all the news things make you turn it off or they won't let you read the news, so.
I think that's cool, actually. I like the idea that a website still works and it just goes, hey, look, this is how we make money. If you really want to read this, would you turn the ads back on? I think that's awesome. In my opinion, I think that's great.
Yeah, but I can't see buying an ad blocking when you can get it free.
Right. Well, again, this is like what you're buying from them when you buy a subscription service like this is you're buying, you're passing the onus off to this company. So what they're saying is all your traffic will be filtered for ads as it's going out to your devices. Before it touches your device, it will have been checked for ads and it will be blocked in whatever manner, in this case, Euro has come up with to be the most effective. So when you use the AdBlock Plus, you're really, you're using an app in one app. You're using an add-on to your browser. So you're using an app inside an app to control that one experience. And then if that stops helping you, because they've changed their ad technology. A lot of that's going on right now. If all of a sudden that ad blocker is not doing its job for you, then you're left. You have the onus of finding a way of accomplishing that same task in a different manner now. Whereas if you've subscribed to this service with Eero, they are constantly, that's part of their business model. They're constantly looking for a way to block ads on your devices. So if something changes, they've got a division that's been put in place to work around that change so that they can continue to offer you the service. You know, it's very similar to the way SmartDNS works on your ability to access Netflix outside of the United States. The onus is all on them. You're paying them monthly, and so they've taken on the responsibility of making it a one-button solution for you. You don't care how the button works, just as long as when you push it, it does what you're paying for it to be done.
Uh-huh.
Some of this stuff, I don't mind at all. I would like to see some responsibility taken away from me if it's just a small fee to do it. The tough part is how easy it is to get into those payments. I'm reflecting on my kids, and we have a Game Pass with Xbox, and it's set up in quarterly payments. And every time I want to shut it down, we've gotten into a new game. And so I end up justifying it to myself like, well, we could have spent that money going to the movies. I mean, there needs to be an entertainment budget in your life. But at the same time, it's $45 every 3 months. But it's so awesome. I've got access to hundreds of games. The problem is, if I don't make that quarterly payment, I have access to none of those games. I don't actually own any of them. What I own is the ability to use their service. In fact, what they can do is I can be playing a game that's awesome, and in the next quarter they can say, this is no longer part of the package. And so I could be like a third of the way through a game, and they can say, no, we're not offering that anymore. And it just stops working for me. And now I'm left going, well, now I have to own it. Now I have to go buy it. So a lot of pluses and minuses with these subscription services. Well, Linda, do you have anything else you'd like to add to your Eero experience? I've always been very happy with this equipment, and I'm really happy to hear that you're having a good experience using the lower cost one. If you guys remember, Linda had found a deal on Amazon for just under, like a penny under $200 that included an Echo Dot, and then she went over to Eero the company and found the same deal without the dot for $169. And that's a much better deal when Amazon's just handing you dots for free whenever you do a deal.
Well, my comment on this was, you know, when we did the Orbi, it was so difficult and it never did hook up. Well, what happened to me when I was hooking this one up, and then I went in and to the help, and it said I could leave my Ethernet on because I wasn't setting it up on my phone. I set it up on my tablet.
Okay.
Because my problem is I have AT&T on my phone, and you can only get it in the house. You can only get it in the house on Wi-Fi.
Well, that may be a misconception, because really what's going on is you're using the phone like your tablet. When you connect to the device, you may be using Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, but you're not actually using phone service. And so if your phone was completely dead, had no signal with cell, you should still be able to use it to set up your Eero.
I couldn't. And I've asked, well, the problem with it is AT&T, of course, Verizon is the big phone company here.
Okay.
And AT&T and T-Mobile, they work okay when you're out, like, you know, out in the car. They work okay when you're not by the house. But when you're by the house here, they don't work. And I didn't want to get Verizon because I went into Verizon and they wanted me to get a new phone. And well, I don't want to buy a new phone.
I'm assuming you're on AT&T. You must have Wi-Fi calling with them.
Yes.
So when your internet's up, you're able to use it for your phone service.
At home.
Yeah,
just at like home. In San Carlos.
Yeah.
You know, in San Carlos, when you go in the house, you're using the house on your telephone. You're not using...
You're using the Wi-Fi connection. It's basically data or cell, and cell is data as well. It's just a different form.
Well, it's nice because you're in the house and you can use the phone. It's not costing you anything. I was surprised last month when AT&T told me I could go to a less...
A smaller contract?
Less data, because they said you're not using any data. And I thought, well, because I'm in the house with it all the time. And I only use it a little bit when I go out of the house. But I don't want to do that, because once, if we go out and you travel on the road, then you're using your data.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and besides that, don't you get free rollover?
Say again, Judy?
You get rollover?
You get to, do you get rollover on data?
I don't think so. I don't know if they have that anymore.
They used to have rollover minutes, but I wasn't aware they had rollover data.
I'm not even using, I mean, a fraction of what I'm paying for, but I'm only paying $45 a month. So I'm not complaining.
You know, my Telcel, I pay less than $40 a month here, and I use that Mi Telcel app on my phone. And I'm constantly surprised at how much data I don't use. I mean, I've only got a contract that gives me something like 3 to 8 gigs, if I remember right. And I'm never coming close to using up all that data, because I'm always surrounded by Wi-Fi everywhere I go.
Well, see,
yeah, you know, I had that pretty big contract in San Carlos.
Yeah. Cheryl, what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
Well, we bought our AT&T plans in Vegas, and they're unlimited data, unlimited phone calls, international to Canada, U.S., and Mexico. And it's about $45 a month. And then because we've got them bundled, the two phones, they give us a discount. So it turns out to be $40 US a month for two phones, unlimited data, unlimited phone calls, everything with AT&T.
Oh my gosh, that sounds like a great deal.
No, $80. $80.
$40 each.
Yes.
But does that include tax, or is tax on top of that?
There is a small tax. It's Nevada tax. So I think.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it works out to be about $110 Canadian dollars, which is so cheap for a cell phone service. And the unlimited data, we've had it work everywhere. We, you know, we've used it in San Carlos, we've used it in the US.
That's what we have. We have the two phones and that same exact plan. And so for us in Arizona, it should be about $88 for two phones.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah. So, Judy, you got the car fixed?
Yes, I'm in my car in their parking lot now.
You got Siri radio going while you're talking to us?
No, I don't. I can't do both at the same time.
You driving, looking around?
No, I'm parked in their parking lot.
Oh.
Yes, I'm driving. Hi.
Pardon me. Well, hey, did anybody bring any other topics? I've got some stuff with me if you're interested.
Scott.
Bill, go ahead.
Yeah, I remember talking to you a little while ago. I thought it was pretty interesting, all politics aside, but the you know, 14-year-olds set up their TikTok thing and run a game on the Trump's rally.
What, wasn't that awesome? Did you guys hear about that? Boy, I should have put that in the lineup here.
I loved it.
That was so cool. Yeah, apparently TikTok had a big thing going on where just sign up for the rally. I saw a couple of the videos where it's like, I am so looking forward to not showing up for the rally I just signed up for. You should sign up to not show up as well. Very impressive use of social media. Oh, pardon me. Did you have anything you wanted to add to that, Bill?
No, I just thought it was an interesting development in like that age group that they are savvy enough. They just it's natural to them. They don't care. They just do. They go, okay, let's do this. And away they go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
let's just hope that the 18-year-olds just do it and get out and vote.
Right.
I don't know if anybody could hear me.
Yes. Go ahead, Stanley.
Well, I've been for the last half an hour, I've been trying to figure out how to get my voice going. I just kind of figured it out now.
Well, we heard you when you first came on. It was just a little quiet.
I know. Now I'm good.
Oh, you're excellent. Very clear.
Yeah, well, I got a little topic if you have get a chance.
Sure.
There's two forms of Defender. One is Defender Supreme or Advanced, and one is Plain. If you can explain the difference, I'd like that, you know, when you get a chance.
You know what, Stanley? I'm not familiar with two different forms. What I am familiar with is a version of Defender that was being run on Windows 7 and Windows 8, and then it came over to Windows 10, and recently, like in the last year or two, it's been renamed Windows Security Center, and the firewall in Windows has been renamed Defender. So it's a little confusing as far as naming goes, but all the functions, I think, are all the same.
Yeah, well, I was looking at it this morning, and I had two choices. I had the regular Defender, and then I had the Advanced Security one. So I don't know what the difference is and whether or not the Advanced Security with the firewall and everything is going to harm me more than help me.
Well, what would be – I would be interested in seeing what you're looking at, because one of the things about Defender is that it's integrated into Windows 10. So there's no reason for you to have to download or install anything.
I know, but will it if I go ahead and use the security one with the firewall and everything, will I lose my ability to use some of my programs? That's what I'm concerned about.
You're talking about the one built into Windows 10. That's what we're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, that is not the typical experience. In fact, the reason that most of the IT guys, in fact, all the IT guys I can think of, I watch a lot of tech people and listen to their opinions, listen to the problems they've had with computers. I have my own experiences to go on. And I don't know of anybody at the moment that isn't recommending to walk away from third-party antiviruses and firewalls and use the true Microsoft stuff. It is a change. This is a different time we're living in. And in this period in time right now, Microsoft is doing the best job with their operating system in this respect. And the third-party applications that are having to be given access because of the going all the way back to the Department of Justice cases with Microsoft, but it's not insider trading. It's monopolizing the market in that area. I can't remember the terminology. There's terminology for it, and it's evading me at the moment. But basically, Microsoft is in a position where they have to make it possible for third parties to compete with them in this space. And that's the only point I was trying to make, that that the way that Microsoft has to make it available makes Windows less secure. Microsoft has to open things so that Norton's can do the job that Microsoft was already doing. And that opening leaves you open to more compromise than having just left it shut in the first place.
Okay, I just looked it up. There is Microsoft Defender Advanced Threat Protection for Microsoft 365.
Ah, okay. And,
okay, so it came out March 4th. How much does Microsoft Defender ATP cost? The new Microsoft Defender ATP standalone retail is $5.20 per month per user for up to 5 machines.
I
so we probably don't need it because it's got all these minimum requirements for it. So what was this the free one?
So thank you, Linda, because I obviously have not seen that compared to what's in Windows, which is what I think that Stanley's looking at. And I think you found what he's looking at. Does this sound right, Stanley, what Linda's looking at?
Yeah, but I didn't know about the subscription price. Now, I have 365, which I pay a yearly subscription to use for Office.
So they used to, they've been having this commercial version of this stuff that's more advanced and has more features. I guess you'd have to go through the feature set to decide whether it was something you were concerned about. What I do know is that it's the one thing that the free things don't have that the paid third party, like the Nortons, Norton still has a foot in the market. McAfee still has a foot in the market. And the reason is because when you get into a situation where you're dealing with more than 5 computers, you have an IT guy that's administrating all of that. And so there's things like being able to track where a virus infests your network, which you can't do with the security that's built into Windows. And what Linda's reading about right now is this system where you can use what's in Windows to attach to a cloud service so that you can do things like that. Like me as an IT guy can get reports on the computers that I'm responsible for. And I can see Stanley's computer got infected. Stanley's in that network. As Linda connected to that network, she got infected. And so it helps to explain where infections come from and block them and retraining. It's a whole lot more information, and it's taken as an aggregate of various computers. And that is not what exists in the free software. And that's the reason Norton's is still here and McAfee's is still here. Avast is still here, is because they're providing those kinds of services now to corporations. Microsoft's very quickly trying to reshape. They've had those services before, but they're trying to reshape and remold that to get more market share in that area.
So I have a question for Stanley.
I was just about to say that I've been in contact with Microsoft support many times because I have multiple problems. I have on my Outlook. When I want to delete my, certain my task files, the computer freezes up. It's just ridiculous.
This is when you're using when you're using Outlook. The task list there. You're saying gets freezed up when you try and delete something.
That is correct, and it's been. It's been like 70% of the time bad, maybe 30% of the time it works.
That's interesting. You know, one of the... Oh, hey, Paul's joining us. Good morning, Paul. We are currently in a discussion about Windows security software. Did I freeze up? Are you guys still there? Can you?
I can hear you.
Oh, good, good.
I can hear you.
I don't know, something on my end made it look like you all froze for a moment. I'll blame me.
So, Stanley, I have a question for Stanley.
Oh, okay.
Why do you have to pay for Microsoft 365 just to get Outlook when you can get Outlook for free?
Well, I've been running into problems with that because of my visibility problems and the fact that I had Microsoft Professional Windows 10. I needed to like tie them together. It's much better for me to use the subscription because at least I can go to technical support.
Well, you know, I sure wouldn't knock that subscription with Microsoft. There's such good stuff in there. I mean, when you pay the subscription fee, and I get nothing from directing you to Microsoft, and I grew up hating Microsoft. Let me just qualify all that. I have no fond love for this company until recently. Since Bill Gates has left, it's just done amazing. Well, no, that's not right. Since Steve Ballmer left, they've just done amazingly innovative, good technology, which is not what they were doing before. And in the subscription model, you have the rights to download their latest release of Office in its most up-to-date incantation. You have access to help support. But I think the big one is you've got a terabyte of cloud space out there. And that's amazingly powerful with these high-speed internet connections. And my most recent example of stuff like that isn't actually on the Microsoft side of things, but it's the Apple side of things. And for about half the price of what Microsoft is charging, Apple for the same price, you get about half or a third of the space on the Apple side of things. And fortunately, my customer doesn't need a terabyte of space. 200 gigabytes is fine for what they're doing. But in the Apple world, using that cloud space with a high-speed internet connection, both their Macintoshes and their iPhone are synchronizing all their photos to the cloud. And what that means for my customer who doesn't really know anything about their technology is they can go out in the world, they can take pictures with their iPhone, they can check their email with their iPhone, they can do all these things, and then they come back home and they sit down at their laptop and they want to look at the pictures they just took, and they're just magically, auto-magically there in front of them. And they don't have to think about where they came from or how they got on their computer. All they have to do is pay $3 a month and have a high-speed internet connection available.
Who do we pay the $3 a month to? Sign me up.
To Apple. To Apple, you set up iCloud. You set up iCloud in your iPhone, in your Apple Photos app. You set it up in your iPhone app and in your laptop and in your tablet. And all those things synchronize. So your entire photo collection is synchronizing through the cloud to your devices.
So it'll go from my iCloud to my Windows 10, what?
No, it will go from your iCloud to your Mac laptop running Apple Photos to your Mac, to your Apple iPad running Apple Photos to your iPhone running Apple Photos.
Okay, so there's the problem. iPhone, iPad, which is got the really, really old operating system, and I'm finding I can't do a lot of things with it. I've been trying to go with Google Drive more.
Okay.
For photos.
Mostly because of compatibility with older equipment, I would imagine.
Well, but my main camera is now my iPhone.
Right. So you can choose you can choose your Google Drive, I believe, on your iPhone as a location for storing pictures. Oh, wait, no. In Google Photos, you don't have to. In Google Photos, you just have to have it running. And it synchronizes your library over to Google Photos. That's right.
Right. So we've got Google Photos on a lot of things, even on the iPhone and the iPad. But I'm still running out of storage space.
Well, you're running out of storage space on your device or in your cloud?
Both.
Okay. So. Well, that's a different issue. The issue, what I was describing, wasn't describing it as a path for solving problems, but more the ideal situation. My customer that I'm working with in this respect has plenty of space on their iPhone, plenty of space on their Macintoshes. The 200 gigabytes, like I said, cloud space is ideal for them because they're not creating a ridiculous amount of data. They do documents from time to time. They do spreadsheets time to time. Pictures and videos are the big things that they're doing, and mostly pictures. And I bring it up because this is an ideal situation. Two Macintosh laptops and an iPhone, or it could have been an iPad in that mix. But because they're not hurting for space and because the demands don't exceed what they've purchased, all this stuff just flows seamlessly. And I was able to wipe a computer and sign it into their iCloud account and then have it restore all the documents from their to synchronize so that those documents are on the computer locally, but then they make a change to that document and that change is synchronized across iCloud, which means that it's available on their other computer, which means it's available on their phone, because they've set themselves up in this ideal arrangement. It's ideal because Apple wants it to be ideal. They want you on some of the latest technology. They want you to buy into their iCloud. They want you to buy enough iCloud for the kind of user you are. When you do that, it all just flows. It just spreads like butter.
So one other question for you. So
sure.
iCloud, like when I bought the iPad, I set up iCloud and it had the minimum amount of free storage space. Then when I got my iPhone, I set up another iCloud. Like, can you have unlimited number of iClouds?
Okay, so you can have, last time I checked, up to 5 devices on the same iCloud.
Okay, but you can have the devices on the same iCloud, and then you would pay for a subscription and get that. But what I'm asking you is, can you have 2 different iClouds?
Yes, you can, but they don't work together. Now,
they don't talk to each other.
Yeah, now what you can do, and I have not done this, but I have read about this, is that you can have a family plan that allows you to take, and we keep saying iCloud when really we should say Apple account, because that's what we're really talking about. We're talking about an Apple services account, Google services account, Microsoft services account. We're talking about an Apple services account. And you can have more than one Apple services account, just like you could have more than one Amazon account or more than one Hotmail account. You can have more than one Apple services account. And Apple has recently, in the last couple of years, put together this concept of a family plan. And it has changed, and I haven't looked at it in a while. But what I understand, and again, I'm qualifying this with, I've never set this up. But from what I understand, you can take one Apple services account, call it the main account, and then you can list accounts that should have access to the same information, the same storage space, the same pictures, the same notes. That's the way I understand it. I can do more research on it if you need. Cheryl,
I think that would help us because that's kind of what I'm looking for, is something so that no matter if I'm on the phone or I'm on the iPad, and then I'll have to figure out what I'm going to do with my Windows.
Maybe what you've gotten caught up in, Cheryl, is that like my customer, they got a new iDevice. They thought they needed a new Apple Services account, so they signed up for another Apple Services account. They got another Apple device, and they signed up for another Apple Services account. Fortunately for my customer in this case, she had only done any of her purchasing, including the iCloud space, under one particular account. The others were just extraneous. And so I was able to say, no, bad user, let's put all your devices on that one account that you've been doing your purchases on and forget about these other accounts. These other accounts don't matter to you. You're one person. You should have one account. It should spawn across your devices. And that was very easy. Where it gets complicated, and the same thing happens in the Microsoft Services accounts, is if you've done purchases on different accounts. It's really, there is not a good way to umbrella those purchases. So say you've got I want to do a Microsoft, but say Microsoft is a good example for this. Say you've purchased Office 365. So you've got the software. Say you've paid for it for a year. Say you've paid for it with $100 a year, which gives you 5 licenses, so you can stick it on 5 different computers. Then you've purchased a movie using a different Microsoft account. Maybe some music from... It's funny, my example's falling apart because I'm remembering that they've stopped selling music. So I think they're still selling movies. But basically, you're supposed to own that movie. But there's no way to transfer that movie over to your other account. Essentially, if you want to have access to that movie and you want to have access to your Microsoft 365, you've got to maintain both those accounts. You have to have 2 different usernames, 2 different passwords, of course. You've got to conscientiously sign in to one to get the services of one and then sign in to the other to get the services of the other. It becomes very convoluted and difficult. So I think what's unfortunate that what we know now and wasn't clear to people as they were signing up and buying services is you got to stick with one services account. If you find yourself with more than one services account, you should start now. At least wrap your head around the idea that if you're going to lay down a credit card, always do it in the same account. Make sure that account can be recovered. Like, make sure there's a recovery email in that account. Make sure it's associated with a device like a cell phone so that you can always get back to that account. That account is your online persona in business. When you go to deal with Microsoft, it's that Microsoft account you bought your subscription service from that they're going to see you as a person. The other accounts, the other random Hotmail accounts you have, they could be services accounts. That's not where you want to start buying stuff because you don't want to have these purchases spread across different accounts. It becomes very complicated.
Okay, so yeah, I think we need to talk because as far as I can figure out, we've got 3 accounts. You know, we've got one for Bill, one for Cheryl, one for my iPad, iService accounts, Apple service accounts. Each of them has an iCloud.com email or a different email. You know, so.
I'm making a note, Cheryl, I'm making a note to myself right now to come back and get this information for you specifically, and we will talk later this week, okay?
Okay, so it's a family plan we're kind of looking for.
I think so. I think what we're looking for is the way to take these accounts you already have and associate them, but you may still run into problems with purchasing or previous purchases. And this,
I think the only one of those accounts has been used for purchasing. Like, you mean like purchases of music or Prime or...
Or books. Prime is not the best Apple example, but like buying audiobooks, buying ebooks, if you're doing any of these things through Apple, then it gets complicated. Apps, if you bought an app through the App Store, what is a very typical experience is you installed an app on your device under one account, and later you've changed to a different Apple Services account. When it comes to updating that app, well, you have to reauthorize that. And so you're in the Apple Store watching updates, or maybe you're not even in the store. Actually, I forget. I do my own self IT administration. Most folks are just getting updated whenever, if you plug it into power, it's like, oh, maybe this is a good time to update apps. And so the App Store is updating stuff. So they hit that one app or a half dozen apps that you installed under your other account, and then it starts asking for authorization. Because the app was installed with an encryption key that identifies that app as owned by that particular Apple Services account. So you sign in with Bill's account on your device and install an app, and later you're like, ah, damn it, I didn't mean to sign in with Bill's account. I meant to sign in with Cheryl's account. So you sign out of Bill's account, you sign in with Cheryl's account, everything's hunky-dory until that app needs an update. And the moment that app needs an update, there's a screen going, what's Bill's password? Because the device knows that app was specifically for Bill.
Okay. I think I figured out some things that are going on with my iPad.
Oh, awesome.
For that specific reason.
That's awesome. Hey, and don't get scared of reinstalling free apps. If you've got a free app and it was installed under the wrong account, just delete it and reinstall it under the account you're using, and that problem will go away. It's the paid apps that become complicated.
Right. Which we hardly done very many.
Yeah,
maybe
most
done more, but
yeah, most people don't. Most people stick with free apps and what was in their device, and then they buy an Office package for work. And so what you'll probably find is it's cumbersome and confusing, but as you work your head around it, you really haven't lost anything. If that makes sense.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Wow, I feel like I've solved problems today. Hey, you know, we're spending a lot of time talking on Apple stuff, and I hope people don't mind. I had two topics that I bring to the table today, specifically Apple stuff, specifically because of the Worldwide Developers Conference that Bill and I tried to watch together. I appreciate Bill showing up. He was the one person that showed up to chat with me while we talked about what was going on the Apple stuff. And the two topics I wanted to bring up, one, which is very fast, but I thought you'd find humorous. I was streaming it out on YouTube, like I do our club meeting. I had put up a graphic that said watch party for WWDC starting at 10 o'clock. Everybody's welcome to join us. Here's the Google Meet number to be in. I opened up the YouTube channel like a half hour early just because we're screwing around, just waiting. The show begins. Bill and I are chatting. I'm flipping back and forth between Bill and I and the show. And I immediately, I'm probably only 13 minutes into the presentation, and YouTube cuts me off and slaps my hand and calls me a spammer and says that you're just rebroadcasting somebody else's feed, and if you do it again, you're going to lose access for a week. And if you do it after that, you're going to get a strike. And if you get too many strikes, we're going to kick you off YouTube. Let me be clear. Bill and I were the only ones, and nobody was watching the stream. While Bill and I were talking, I'm like, this is crazy. And I wrote a little, it gave me an opportunity to contest.
Reflect on your sins.
That's right. I was able to contest what they had done. And so I wrote an appeal. That's what it's called. I wrote an appeal and went back to watching the show with Bill because I really didn't care whether it was on YouTube or not. I cared more that they were kicking us off of YouTube. They haven't kicked us off of YouTube today, though it does look like I'm having internet problems. It came back, The appeal was rejected before the show was done, just like that. And it's pretty, I mean, I wrote a whole thing. Anyway, I thought you guys might find that funny. If anything, I don't know what YouTube's rules are. I read through all their spammer rules. I feel like somebody was picking on me. I feel like somebody's like, ah, screw this guy. Filed a complaint. Their algorithm took over. This guy can't do anything. I think they were picking on me.
Probably a Democrat.
I don't know what it was. But hey, what it did is it prompted me to find a different platform. In fact, when Bill couldn't be with me any longer, I was watching it by myself. I decided to go join somebody else's watch party. So I'm in the midst of my watch party, and I put on the screen Twit's watch party. And I see he's doing it all through Mixer. And so maybe I just should give up on YouTube. It looks like that's what he's done, is I can't afford to get kicked off of YouTube today, so I'll do it on Microsoft's Mixer. I'm like, great, I'll keep that in the back of my mind. Well, it turns out this week, Microsoft announced they're shutting down Mixer. I bet you're all just sitting there going, hey, what's Mixer? I've never heard of Mixer. Doesn't matter. It's gone.
No, not Mixer. No.
My favorite app. Mixer is a streaming service to compete with Twitch. I don't know if you know what Twitch is, but Twitch is the latest in streaming gaming, which none of us care about. That's why we don't know what Twitch is, and that's why we don't know what Mixer is.
You know, the new Microsoft Edge is amazing. You know, the old one was not compatible with my Zoom text, which reads Windows Explorer.
I remember that, Stanley. We were talking about that in a previous meeting.
And now it does. The new Edge now will read the Zoom text.
Yeah, and Stanley, you remember I was pretty confident that's what was going to happen, because the new Edge is based on Chromium, which is the engine for Chrome. And that's one of the reasons they've made this change, is because this engine is so well-founded now that it is a standard for the internet. And they can focus on other issues around the browser while knowing that they're keeping that compatibility. I'm glad it worked for you. Say again?
Well, I have two versions of Zoom. One specifically for Chrome, which is not friendly user. The original one that I use on Microsoft Explorer is friendly, and the friendly unit, the friendly version works on the Edge.
That's awesome. That's great to hear. I'm actually writing a note about it right now. It's good to know that you can use Zoom text, what you called the friendly version, with the new Microsoft Edge. I think the new Microsoft Edge is great.
Yeah. Now the Zoom text is specifically for visually handicapped people, and it's a very expensive program.
I have run into Zoom text in this town a number of times, and it seems to be mostly with visually impaired people that are veterans, because the state will buy it for them.
Right, and they bought it. That program's over $1,000.
Yeah, but it's very helpful I'm told.
Right, and also I'm going to be sending you an email. I'd like to get together with you, one day this week for a session.
Sure, please do, Stanley. I'd be happy to.
Great.
So I said I had two. That was just my silly story, but the one that I think's very interesting came at the end of the Worldwide Developers Conference. I don't think Bill was still with me at that point, and I don't think I actually got it until later in the week. I kept rewatching, but they announced that they're leaving Intel chips. Did you guys hear that? They announced that we will, within 2 years, all the Macs will be running their own silicon. In fact, right now, all the tech reviewists are calling it Apple Silicon, because they don't have a name for the chip. And they announced a developer kit, which is a Mac Mini with the chip from the 13-inch iPad Pro. It's an A12Z chip. That's what Apple calls it, an A12Z chip. And what we know about these chips is they're ARM chips. They're similar to the chips that you have in your phones and tablets that run Android. In the Apple world, they run iOS. And the big significant thing that they're changing here is their operating system for their laptops will be running on the same chips that their iPads and their phones are running on. This is an amazing platform switch, but it's also a PSA. And this is the reason I bring it up in Club. If you like Apple technology, they also warned us that over the next 2 years, they're going to continue to release Apple laptops and Apple desktops with Intel chips. This is the worst time to buy Apple technology, Apple desktops and laptops, not Apple technology, I'm sorry, Apple desktops and laptops. If you're in the market for an Apple desktop or laptop, this is not the time to buy them. Because there's a dramatic shift that's going to be happening over the next 2 years. Amazing amounts of power are going to become available. And you will be looking at laptops that are already brand new, completely out of date for where we're going into the future. So I don't know why they did it. I think it's a horrible business move. But they announced, we're changing everything, and they announced, we're still selling the old computers. Even updated. The old computers updated, we're still selling while we go through this transition. I don't think anybody that's interested, there are people that have to upgrade. I understand that. I wouldn't buy a Macintosh. I'd buy a computer to get you through this time period, and that would be a Windows 10 computer, and maybe it might be with an AMD chip, because AMD has slaughtered Intel in this space. This year, they have released some of the most powerful PC chips out there. Amazing technology in your hands at two-thirds the price of Apple technology. If you needed a computer right this moment, I think I would be recommending going that direction. And that has just happened. I would recommend, can you hold off just a couple of months? Because in a couple of months, these insanely fast, powerful computers will be coming out onto the market at much more reasonable prices than what Apple's going to be selling their equivalent computers for. And then at the end of 2 years, we're going to be in a whole different world for these desktop and laptop computers. They're going to be much more like iPads in a laptop form factor or a desktop form factor. And they've already what was really amazing on the presentation, and Bill didn't know this at the time, I found this out later. All their presentations, all the rendering, the gaming, all of it was done on these new chips. None of it was on the traditional i7s, i5s, i3s that they've been running their computers with. The whole presentation was done on this new chipset that they're going to move their whole line over to. That means all the software that you've got right now is compatible with what's going on in the future. This latest operating system that they've released, what they call it, Big Sur, is going to be compatible on their new chips, obviously. But if you're able to run your software on Big Sur, you're going to be able to run it on these new computers. I had another point in there, and my mind just lost track because I saw Dave jump back in. I hope people aren't having a problem staying in our meeting. I've watched people jump in and out of this meeting a couple of times. This is just an amazing change in technology that we're witnessing. Oh, I know what the point was I was going to make. They're ready for the change. Last time they did this, we went through lots of growing pains. But the way they're presenting this, it should be fairly seamless. And what I caught that was really funny for me as a tech guy is I was, as I was saying, in somebody else's watch party. And, oh no, it wasn't the watch party. It was actually afterwards I was watching more footage of the same guy. Leo Laporte. I don't know if you guys follow other tech people, but Leo Laporte does a number of different tech shows. And he was saying, that game looks better on my Windows machine. It's got better rendering. The light looks better. The leaves as they're running through the forest look like real leaves. And then they announced all that was through emulation. That what we were watching, and keeping games end up being the meter, the yardstick that we compare everything against, because games require so much out of the equipment. And so Leo was complaining that, you know, I don't know why they're impressed with themselves. I get a better presentation from my souped up Windows 10 machine than what they're showing us on the screen. And then they said, all of this is happening on our new chip with our emulator. And the emulator is this constrained little software computer pretending to be a Windows computer so they can run the game. Well, at that moment, it became amazing because we had never seen so much performance come out of an emulator before. That it was literally able to run this game and play it. And I mean, it was definitely an enjoyable presentation. And what they said is that you look forward to this being even better when this gets released later this year. So this is the first real emulator that they've had emulators before. You could run Windows in it. You could do Photoshop in it. You could do Office in it. But play games, never. Hey, to go and play Call of Duty on your Macintosh, unheard of. Not possible in an emulator. In fact, that's where boot camp came from. The ability to reboot your computer running Windows so you could use it for gaming. Oh, on a side note, that's missing. They have not verified that you will be able to run Windows 10 on these computers. Either company. Windows 10, this is the reason I want to bring up this topic, is that it's pretty broad. Windows 10 is doing the same. Microsoft's doing the same thing with Windows 10. They have partners out there that are going to be running Windows 10 on ARM-based chips. These ARM-based chips, I mean, we're looking at 30 to 100 processors all on one chip. Microsoft is really looking forward to being able to run their software on these style chips. And they've got a number of hardware partners out there they've already partnered with to build computers with their operating system. But they will not say whether it's going to run on Apple hardware. And they have not licensed the ARM-based version of Windows to run on third-party products. The only people that get to run Windows 10 on ARM are their partners, are their OEMs. So this is going to get really interesting over the next year as far as where the technology shapes up. But if you were ready to drop $1,500 on an Apple, I would drop $800 on a Windows computer and wait to get these new computers that are coming out in 2 years. And that's my topic.
Scott?
Yes, sir. Any questions?
Yeah. Talk a little bit about their new iOS system, 14. It said that with their translators in it? Do you remember what they were talking about?
Yeah. Boy.
The way I understood it, that you would be able to talk to somebody over the phone and it would directly translate both ways.
Oh, thank you for remembering that, Bill. I actually wrote a whole list in Dry Mark Eraser and I took a photo of it. And as you're saying this, I'm trying to bring up the photo because I didn't write down the list. I had to clean my surface. I'm like, oh, I need that list. And I took a photo of it. And so here I am now looking for the photo. But that's right. One of the things that they put into their new iOS software is this translator. I mean, we've been playing with translators with Google Translate. But this is real-time translation at the iOS level, at the operating system level. You hit a button and you put your phone in front of you and who needs to translate. And the two of you have a conversation and it's translating one to the other in real time. No more needing to
Goodbye,
go.
Everybody. Gotta run. See you later.
Is that Stanley?
That's Stanley.
All right. We'll talk to you next week or sooner.
Yeah, I will certainly. See you all later. Bye.
I found my list here. Translator, picture-in-picture, app clips. Okay, yeah, these are all the things that I thought were really interesting about the new iOS software. And the translator was one of them. And that was very impressive, where you just hit a button, choose your languages, and start talking. Picture-in-picture, so you're able to watch a YouTube video while you're writing email. It sounds silly, but I do catch myself doing things like I'm following something on ABC News, and all of a sudden I got to deal with a chat message or an email. That's going to be a possible thing now. And app clip. This is one of the newest things that I thought was very interesting. One of the things that you run into with your iPhone and your Android phone is you go to a website and you're using a web service and they're like, hey, wouldn't you like to do this in our app? Amazon's a good example. If you go to Amazon.com on your phone, it will take up a third of the screen at the top saying, would you like to do this? And would you like to do this in the Amazon app? And then you have to download the Amazon app and you're ready to go. But the problem with that model is implicitly, you're not ready to go. Implicitly, you need to download the app before you can do anything. And if you're like me, if I don't have the app downloaded, I'm not bothering with it in that moment. I've got a goal I'm trying to accomplish. I just realized I've got another. And if I'm not working on that goal, I'm not moving forward, there's absolutely no reason I'm not going to take off and get sidetracked installing an app so that I can do this. I'm going to stay focused on that web page. Forget the app getting installed. So what Apple has created is this thing called App Clips. And the idea is that there are some rudimentary functions that all apps need. And the app developer can make that available from the web page. And so when you go to the web page, you can immediately start taking advantage of those functions. You can clip it to your home screen and you never have to download the app. You never have to use up that space in your phone for the app. This would be like shortcuts to websites, but very fully formed features available to you. I see Cheryl talking, but I can't hear a word she's saying. So I think...
Scott, I think your time is up. You put Paul asleep.
Sorry, Paul. Obviously, I can go on and on.
Scott, are you going to sell your Intel stock now?
I don't have any stock. I'm a poor example of a Gen Xer. I have no stock. Well, thank you for that, Bill. We have exceeded our regular hour of meeting. I am happy to sit here and talk with you guys if you have any questions you want to finish off with. But we probably do need to start winding it down. Do we have any other topics we'd like to add to today?
I have a question.
Go for it, Linda.
Okay, on your tablet and on your phone, when you have an SD card installed.
Yes.
When the apps update, you have to keep putting them back on the SD card. How come?
It has to do with your Android version. Your version has been set up so that it defaults to the internal space and not the SD card. Now, in some versions, and I'm sorry, I'm pulling from way back. I'm thinking about KitKat. I'm hoping it still works the same way. But you could go into the file app and you could specify where apps are supposed to download by default.
File app?
Yeah, the file app used to allow you to do that. I would look in the file app. You know, that's like the on Android, it was the equivalent of Explorer on Windows 10. On Android, it was the file app or My Files. Does that sound familiar to you, Linda? I know you've used it in the past. But it was, you know what? There is a file app. I haven't even tried it, but there's a file app that Google is offering now with the newer versions of Android. Maybe you would find the same kind of setting in there. Go ahead.
I should Google it, file app?
I was going to say what you should probably Google is how to change default installation on and then put your device in there. Because it seems to me this is a device issue. Some devices do it automatically. You say, this is my default location, and it will continue to update apps and put them in that default location. My Huawei, in fact, all the Huaweis in my life, I've mentioned them before. I have a Huawei phone, my daughter does, and my wife does. None of them allow you to install apps on the SD card. There's just no option for it.
Well, I can install them on there. I have a little app for SD card, but I can install them on there. But every time they update, you have to put them back on.
Yeah. And that may be, depending on your device, that may just be the way you have to do it.
Okay. So what do you call this? How to change default what?
Yeah. I'll do the Google search with you. Hold on a second. Let's see. How to change default install location on Android. At least on Lollipop. There was a place in settings under storage. I know that on my Huawei, I can specify a default storage location exactly the way they're saying here, but it doesn't count for apps.
Okay, so this says change default install location to SD card in Android.
There you go.
Okay, so let's see what
you have.
I have a Samsung Galaxy Tab. I think mine's a 3.
Galaxy. It's a Tab 3, is that right?
Yeah. The expensive one.
it gives you the same instructions.
It says, select the app you want to move from the list and tap change button. You do not need to specify where to store content each app, but it goes back each time and I have to put it back on the SD card.
Are you talking about the app or are you talking about the setting for the default location? When you have to go back and reset it? When you're resetting, is that for the particular app or is that for the default storage location?
Well, when you go into
I'm just reading a note here.
I have a little program that I put on for the apps.
You know, I've heard of those kinds of programs. You're talking about one that controls your SD card and allows you to move apps back and forth. Yeah, I personally haven't used any of those. I've tried in the past and haven't been satisfied with how successful they are.
Well, you think that's my mistake? Because it says how do I change default download location on SD card Samsung?
I think for you
that I shouldn't have.
I think for you to change default location, your SD card has to be formatted as adaptive storage.
Adaptive storage.
Yeah, when you go to format the card, what adaptive storage is making it part of the pool of memory that's available to the device. When it's not adaptive storage, it's a secondary storage device. So there's some good and bad things in this. You can add a whole bunch of space to a device by doing adaptive storage, a whole bunch of space that can be used for apps and for temporary files and whatever, for recording. The disadvantage of that is you can't take the card out and stick it in a different device. That card is security encrypted to your device, and if you try and use it somewhere else, it won't be able to read the card. Another disadvantage that I've run into personally a number of times is that adaptive storage that's using the SD card. SD cards have problems just for being SD cards. They can get corrupted just because they're SD technology. If adaptive storage, you can take that card, stick it into another computer, run disk tools on it, fix whatever the problem is, and stick it back in your device.
That's what I've had before.
Right. And the problem that resolves continues to plague us even when you're... Oh, wow. I lost my call. What the hell? What the hell? I'm back.
Oh, here he comes again.
Hey, has everybody else been, or I know I've
like
watched
being on Zoom, but yeah, all of a sudden you just quit.
I've been watching Dave pop on and off.
Is it just you and me left in there?
I see Paul and Cheryl
and Scott's.
Scott's coming back.
I'm back.
Scott's coming back.
Aside from technology, I have no.
Damn it!
On this in particular, but I wanted to know if anybody in San Carlos that came down with the plague.
Not that we know of, Paul.
I think most of the snowbirds have left. There's just our friends that are permanent residents there left.
What is going on here?
None of the snowbirds that came north with us that we know of.
Okay, good.
We don't know anybody personally that are sick yet.
Well, I haven't left my property in 13 weeks now in San Pedro, California.
Oh, this is crazy. Yeah, I can't do anything. Oh, everything's frozen up for no reason.
Arizona,
it's making me
Texas,
crazy.
They're
something's not working right.
Yeah.
You guys can't hear
me.
It's
got to be scary. There's a lot of that virus laying on the ground.
Well, yeah, people just got tired, and then the...
Work, damn it. Oh, I've got somebody coming to join me. Hello.
A group of people.
I don't know what's going on. It just got disconnected. But I can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, we got you, Scott.
Oh, good. Good. I don't know what's going on. I wonder if it's the same thing Dave was dealing with. I watched him pop on and off a number of times. My camera's still not working. I think if you're... Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. See, if you're looking at my camera, it's messed up right now. I don't... Something's broken on my end.
It's been freezing a lot. Like, most of it's been frozen all day. And when you were speaking,